Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
All right, Payne and Pendergast with you. Sean Pendergast, Seth Payne, and it is 7 o'clock on a Tuesday, so we know what time it is. It's time for our Odyssey NFL Insider, Ross Tucker. This
is a guy who, despite being on the call last night for the Buffalo Bills game, has already done his film study on the Texans' offensive line as he comes on with us. Ross Tucker.
Yeah.
Do the mayo thing for
him. I got to get the mayo read in here. Insider calls are brought to you by Hellman's Real Mayonnaise. Mayo game day. Be delicious.
Mm-hmm.
So you...
Ross. Yeah. Ross, this welcome in. How are you doing? You got like 2 hours of sleep in you?
Yeah, so a couple things. First of all, I would say 6 out of 10, Sean, on the Mayo read there.
Okay.
You know, I mean, like, you did it, but you didn't say it like you meant it. So I'll give you a 6 out of 10.
Well, the good news, hey, Ross, the good news is I get to read it two more times between now and the time we cut you loose. So I'll do better, I promise.
You know what I think would be good? I think I will grade you on every Mayo read for the rest of the season.
Okay.
I mean, I don't know. I slept like, probably slept like 4 hours.
Nice, okay.
I think I slept like 2 to 6. I am in Corning, New York, so nobody listening driving in Houston cares at all, but I live in Hershey, Pennsylvania, central Pennsylvania. It's 4.5 hours from Buffalo, so if I do a primetime Buffalo game, I usually don't try to drive all the way back.
That's
so
smart.
I drive like 2 hours to Corning, New York, sleep for a few hours. I've already done the Power Rankings Ross Tucker Football Podcast. I talk to you guys, then I'm going to record the Even Money Betting Podcast, then I'll drive the other 2.5 hours back to central Pennsylvania.
Boy, you are a grinder, man. I respect it. That is that's quite the schedule right there.
So Ross,
you know what?
Ross,
I'm kind of used to it. Next couple weeks, I got doubleheaders. Next week, I've got Browns Raiders on CBS. I might end up getting a Texans game this year, which would be awesome.
That'd be
but
sweet.
I got Browns Raiders CBS on Sunday. And then Titans Dolphins Monday night, which does not look like it's the best game on the slate.
Yuck.
So Ross, this is Laremy Tunsil, not a popular person in Houston right now, and a lot of that, it's, you know, he committed some penalties, took no accountability for it after having 5 penalties in the game on Sunday. But this morning, I've been trying to focus more on the fact that he does not look to give a single damn about doing things properly as a football player either. I sent you some plays, some particularly bad examples, and you responded immediately. Already seen them. Tell me just your overall takeaway on Laremy Tunsil and him being the leader of this offensive line and one of the captains on this football team.
Well, okay, so when I said I already seen them, I've seen the plays you sent me. I watched what you sent me. Yeah, I didn't watch every snap of the Texans' offense or offensive line. Obviously, I watched some of it. It was ugly, really ugly. I will say, in fairness to the Texans' offense a little bit, the Vikings' defense has kind of made every team look like that so far. I mean, you know, after the game against the Niners, Brock Purdy said to their D coordinator, Brian Flores, "Your scheme is crazy, man." And right now, Brian Flores is by far the best defensive coordinator in the NFL, and that showed up again on Sunday. In terms of Tunsil, we can talk through the plays that you sent me, but the biggest frustration is the penalties. And he's trying to, with the false starts, he's trying to get an advantage, right? And I respect that. He's trying to time up the count like Lane Johnson does. You know, and you know this, Seth, because you played D-line, but especially on offensive line, the initial quickness, the how fast you get your first step, and I would actually argue as an offensive lineman, your second step in the ground means almost everything. Like, if you go back and watch all of my bad plays, and there's a lot of them, I usually did not get my second foot in the ground before I engaged with the defensive lineman. So these guys have all gotten way better at timing up the count and maybe false starting, but it being so close that the refs can't call it. But obviously, Tunsil has taken it too far. It's not okay. I think on some level, these guys look at it now like they don't care if they get called for one or two false starts, if it enables them to jump the count the rest of the game and never get beat and be able to say they don't give up any sacks or hits on the quarterback or whatever. I really do believe that's how some of them look at it. Now, specifically in the I think the penalties by Tunsil are unacceptable. He's making too much money. He's too talented. He's too good. He should have zero penalties, right? Like, he doesn't need to try to jump the count that much to still be successful. You know, the plays you sent me are frustrating on some level for a guy that was like a try-hard guy like me. What I will tell you is that, like, the first play, he kind of accomplished what he was, like, he cut off the backside linebacker, which is what his goal is on the play. Would I have liked to have seen him finish it better? Yes, but he won the gap. Like, he won the backside B gap against that linebacker and was not expecting the running back to cut it all the way back.
But then he stopped. But he stopped blocking. Like, he had him blocked. But you're right. But, Ross, it's a zone run where the cutback is, like, always a possibility. And he just stopped blocking. You know, like, and then that guy had a potentially.
It's not a good look. What I would tell you, though, is, like, if the linebacker's running all the way behind you and you've cut him off and it's, like, outside zone to the right, the back should not cut it all the way back that he runs into the linebacker. What I don't care for is Tunsil's sort of body language and manner. So listen, sometimes the really gifted guys and the really good players, they're not finishers. I don't understand that. Like, I don't understand how you play football the way some of those guys do. It drives me nuts. I never thought just blocking people was fun, right? Like, trying to finish them into the ground and smash them into the ground, that's, like, the only thing that's cool about being 320 pounds and playing offensive line. Tunsil does not play that way. The next play, you know, it seems like he and the left guard were not on the same page in terms of how far they needed to go on the, like, I think the left guard needed to maybe get the pinching D end, and that Tunsil might have been right on that one.
Yeah.
It depends on how they're taught. And then the last one, he is taught to take the most dangerous of that backside, like, safety coming down or the end man. And he kind of was torn as to which guy was the most dangerous to the play, and he kind of got caught in between. So I would tell you is none of those are as agreed. Like, none of those, Seth, bother me actually as much as the penalties do.
Oh, really? Yeah, just and the other reason I sent you that too was there were other examples of those three plays I sent you. There was bad blocking all along the entire offensive line too, which is the other part. Like you said, like, Cam Akers isn't expected to cut back as far as he did, and yet he had to break two tackles or miss two guys to get back to where he did, because it wasn't just Tunsil. It's the entire offensive line is out of sync. Like you said, on the one with, like, Tunsil was probably supposed to give Kenyon Green an out call, and maybe he did, maybe he didn't. But it was either Kenyon Green or Laremy Tunsil right there. Something getting screwed up all along the way on those plays.
And what I would say too, and I think this is important, I think culture really, really matters for a football team, and in particular for an offensive line. And Laremy's been a terrific player, and he's had an amazing career, and as a former offensive lineman, I have great respect for how he's he's probably about the highest paid offensive lineman ever, right? The way he's handled close. The business of it, but he definitely plays the position like a guy that's made a ton of money and doesn't have to give full out effort all the time and doesn't have to finish. And I think that that's a bad look. You know, like, he's playing next to a really young player in Kenyon Green. All of these guys want to be Pro Bowl players. They all want to get the contracts that Laramie's gotten. And so what I don't care for, and what I would say to him if I was D'Amico Ryans, is, you know, that play, and I know the linebacker ran around it and you cut him off, but look at your finish on that play. You're setting a bad example for the other guys, you know, the Juice Scruggs, and he's got, like, you're setting a bad example of, like, that's how you handle yourself if you're the $20+ million man. I think that would be my would be my pitch to Laramie, is like, listen, you've made all the money in the world now. We actually have a good enough team to try to go to a Super Bowl and win it. We need a different level of leadership and effort from you than you're showing with these penalties and some of these plays.
Ross Tucker is our Odyssey NFL Insider. Insider calls are brought to you by Hellman's Real Mayonnaise. You can purchase Hellman's at your local Walmart, Kroger, or grocery store to add extra deliciousness and creamy flavor to your game day dishes this football season. How'd I do?
I'd say 7.5, 8.
7.5, yeah, I'm getting better. Okay, we're going to do one more. Hey, Ross, really good breakdown on Tunsil. That was good stuff. I'm curious, two things before we cut you loose. One, it sounds like you did your power rankings. Where are the Texans in your power rankings? And they play Jacksonville. You just got done watching Jacksonville up close last night. Is this a good get-right game for the Texans after the loss to Minnesota? Or should the Texans be nervous that Jacksonville is probably coming in super desperate to get a win?
Yeah, I think that the Texans dropped like two or three spots. I think I have them at 6. Okay. I didn't drop them that much. I mean, it was a bad game, but it's one game. It was on the road. And the Vikings right now are the best team in the NFC. Mm-hmm. I mean, the Vikings in the NFC and the Bills in the AFC have easily been the most impressive teams thus far. Easily. Which is interesting. And then for the Jags, that was about as pathetic of a performance as I've seen from a pro football team in a long time. I got to be honest with you guys, I was shocked, right? I said this on the Even Money Betting podcast, really every podcast. I knew that there would be more 2-1 and 1-2 teams than there would be 3-0 and 0-3, right? So that's why I wasn't surprised that the Broncos beat the Bucks. This is the NFL, right? This is how it happens. I wasn't surprised that the Panthers won against the Raiders or the Giants against the Browns. I took the Jaguars getting 5.5 points last night against the Bills. I really thought the Jaguars, they had been very competitive their first two games. They should have beat the Dolphins week one. They know the deal with teams being 0-3. I thought they'd come out and play their best game, and it's Monday Night Football, it's prime time. They were lifeless. I mean, they came out like a team that had no interest in playing. It was right from the first series. I said to the play-by-play guy, this could get ugly. I mean, it was like they didn't even care to be there, and they gave up touchdowns on their first 5 drives. It's 34-3 at halftime. And I tweeted this at Ross Tucker NFL, and Seth knows this. I'm telling you, I don't know what the fallout will be, but primetime game blowouts are when people get fired or when changes are made, because the owner is usually so embarrassed that they got a primetime game and they laid that much of an egg. I don't know if it's a coordinator or if they make some personnel changes or what, but that was an absolutely embarrassing performance by the Jags in a big spot. They're 0-3, and the way they approached last night's game, the lack of fire and energy, I don't know how you could have any faith that they come out and play differently or better against the Texans. I mean, they have to. No NFL team plays that terrible multiple weeks in a row, but I certainly will not be picking the Jaguars to beat the Texans, that's for sure.
That's Ross Tucker, our Odyssey NFL Insider. Insider calls are brought to you by Hellman's Real Mayonnaise. May your game day be delicious.
9.
Yeah, that was better than that. Thanks, dude.
probably like 8.5.
Okay,
I mean,
that's fine.
I did one last night. I mean, people really get into it. It's 8.5. I can't give you 9, 9.5, or 10 unless you say it like it's the most important thing you've ever said in your life.
Okay. There's always next week, Ross. It's a long season. You know what I mean? Like, I'm like the Jags. I can bounce back next week. So, hey, Ross, we appreciate you joining us as always, man. Appreciate the time. Safe travels back to Pennsylvania.
Absolutely. Thanks, guys.
All right, good stuff. Ross Tucker joining us. That was as good a radio breakdown of Laramie Tunsil on video that a lot of our audience probably hasn't seen.
Yeah,
I was listening to it through that filter, and I'm like, okay, if I'm listening in my car right now, am I okay with listening to breakdown a video I haven't seen?
You know, the one thing I would have said was to push back against what Ross had said a little bit about, yes, acknowledge that the Vikings defense is really good and they have made offenses like the 49ers look kind of inept. The 49ers were still able to run the ball against the Vikings defense. The game flow didn't really end up mattering much at all, that the 49ers could run the ball because the Vikings got off to a lead. But they were able to run the ball successfully. Their offensive line didn't look like inept morons and fools trying to run block versus the Vikings. The Texans, it was quite the opposite. It was really bad. And it wasn't just Laramie Tunsil, but Laramie Tunsil in his lackadaisical manner about things was the most glaring thing when it comes to, all right, what am I getting? How much bang am I getting for the buck here? And what kind of a tone am I setting for everybody else? But like, even there's a play, I've seen a lot of people pointing out the one play where a defender comes unchecked between Kenyon Green and Laramie Tunsil. That was probably on Kenyon Green unless Laramie Tunsil didn't make the right call. But we're seeing that all the way down the line, from left tackle to right tackle. Guys just simply not being on the same page on assignments and passing defenders off and all of that. It's bad. For a team that's supposed to be able to hang its hat on the outside run, they don't know what they're doing. They're just completely inept. And you're not getting good play out of Shaq Mason, your high-paid offensive lineman. You're not getting good play out of Laramie Tunsil or Titus Howard. And the tight end's a whole another scenario. They've got to figure out some way to get a lot better at that very, very quickly.
How fixable is it? Like, are these just mental errors? Are they five dummies on the offensive line? What are we doing?
This is really the test for Bobby Slowick and Chris Strausser, the offensive line coach. It's fixable if you've got – you don't have to have world-class athletes.
That's
you don't
right.
have to have guys. Go back to the Gary Kubiak days and Mike Shanahan, before him. You can take nondescript offensive linemen and turn them into Pro Bowlers or all pros if they're coached upright. And I don't mean to take any of the pressure off the players at all, especially Laramie Tunsil, who just sometimes it's just simply that he's a diva more so than anything else. They're not playing like a well-coached offensive line right now.
Yeah.
And this is Bobby Slowick's big test is, man, you will have no excuse for not running the football this year if you're facing defenses that are going to concede the run, basically, and you still can't run the football. They're basically saying, go ahead and take it. Just take it. We're going to concede it. Just go ahead and take the run. We want to stop Stephon Diggs, Nico Collins, and Tank Dell as much as possible. If you can't run against that, then you're not a genuinely good offensive coordinator.
Yeah.
And you're certainly not a good offensive line coach.
Yeah. Well, and if we're looking long-term with Slowick, why would I hire you as my head coach?
Right.
You know, like, is Bobby Slowick this culture setter that you can just say, no, he'll delegate the OC? No, like, if Bobby Slowick gets hired to be a head coach, it's because the Texans have a top five offense that's balanced. You know, that's not all, because he ain't bringing CJ Stroud with him wherever he goes. You know, like, it's one thing to have an offense that's top five because CJ throws a cape on every Sunday and throws for 350 yards and 4 touchdowns. It's another thing to have a top five offense, and you do it because, hey, one week Joe Mixon's running for $160 and CJ throws for .230.
Yeah.
There are some weeks where they're taking everything away. You know, they're putting 8 in the box, and now CJ makes them pay. Got to have good players. I mean, I'm not saying, like, Bobby Slowick's got to do it with, you know, massive injuries, and he's got to show that he's this guru or anything like that. But when they go make moves to go get Joe Mixon and Stephon Diggs in the offseason, and this is your second year now where you've had this system in place and the same position coaches and everything else, it's got to look better than it's looked the first 3 games of the season, that's for sure.
And there, look, man, this is where I feel like it's coming to roost in a lot of ways. There's such a mismatch between D'Amico Ryan's whole persona and the way he operates. Yeah, D'Amico Ryan's ultimate football dude. C.J. Stroud, ultimate football dude. Texans offensive line. They care a lot about Instagram and fashion, man. You know, like it's there, and it's the position group that you would hope is the most just barroom brawling, dirty, grungy, poor personal hygiene dudes. That's what you want out of your offensive line, and that's certainly not the culture of the Texans offensive line. And I don't put Juice Scruggs and Kenyon Green into that category. I used to put Shaq Mason into that category. I think Shaq Mason's been infected. Because Shaq Mason, the right side of that offensive line is probably about 60 pounds overweight right now.
Yeah, they're fat.
They're like neither of them are moving athletically the way that they should.
Yeah.
And it's kind of embarrassing to watch. I mean, Titus has not been as bad as I think people feel like he's been, but he's not living up to his capabilities. And we noticed it in camp, man. That dude came back big.
Yes.
And he does not move the way he's capable of moving right now. And I just flat out, it's hard for me to watch them on film, the veteran offensive linemen on the Texans, and feel like they actually give a damn. And I don't want it to infect Juice Scruggs and Kenyon Green.
No.
I think those kids give a damn.
Yeah, I do too.
I think they want to do things the right way.
No,
I think if Kenyon Green had Trent Williams next to him, he'd be just soaking it all in.
Yeah.
Like, oh, yeah, I want to go out there and, like, physically destroy guys. All right, yeah. Yeah, let's do this. But that's not the example that's being set for him.
And your fear is that he is soaking it all in, but it's soaking in the Laremy Tunsil experience.
Yes.
That's the fear, yeah.
I fear that Kenyon's going to start caring more about Instagram and fashion
than
actual football.
Yeah, seeing when Coachella is and things like that, yeah.
Yeah.
Are you going to the Super Bowl? No, Coachella for sure, though.
see Kenyon Green with a tiny backpack.
Right.
Some music festival. Festival or something, guzzling down water because all the mollies had that day. Yeah, I don't know. Yeah, that's not what I want.
No, and that's where it's headed right now.
Kenyon Green with a tiny backpack and big Elton John glasses, you know, just looking spaced out of his gourd.
Oh,
no,
my God.
I need him to be just doing an internship at a beer distributorship.
Yeah, there you go. There you go.
Old school.
Poor hygiene. I hope you stink, Kenyon Green. Not as a player.
Yeah.
But
yes.
As a person, like
yes.
Literally you smell. All right, we got a bunch of texts. This is Laremy Tunsil has triggered probably the biggest reaction of anything we've seen. Like the way he's played so far this season, certainly the way he's played on Sunday. And I think the reaction to it, his reaction to it, I think, you know, pointing fingers at the league about the illegal formations, pointing fingers at his teammates about the false starts. There's no other way to construe that. Like
he's been blaming the centers through multiple different centers. Well, none of the other offensive linemen have had an issue with the centers.
Yeah. Somebody asked a question at the press conference yesterday. I couldn't tell who it was, but they're like, what do you think about the... They asked D'Amico, like, what do you think about all your players taking accountability for the loss? How do you feel about that? And I was like, dude, did you not read the quotes from Laremy Tunsil and see the cuts of Titus Howard? Like, Laremy Tunsil's done the opposite of that. Like
sometimes those guys have they're scared to bring up specific names or something.
Yeah.
That's right. The one day at camp, because I just went, and finally I went over to the tent just so I could actually say Damian Pierce's name.
Answer out of it, too.
I'm like, just say, ask the name specifically.
Yeah.
Sean, it's why I don't, it's hard for me as a former player sometimes, because there's a lot of team events and stuff that I'd love to do, but I don't want to be friends with these guys.
Mm-hmm.
I can't be objective if I'm friends with these guys, and I mean I would love to if my job wasn't doing this stuff
right.
And everything, but yeah, sometimes you gotta just check yourself away from the personal associations. Yeah.
Yep. Text messages, slew of them coming in. So this is 1428. How many games has Tunsil had with zero penalties? I don't know. 1428 across the course of his career, this is what I can tell you: nobody's had more penalties since Laremy came into the league as far as procedural pre-snap type penalties.
Yeah.
Along
they're
the offensive line.
Not even aggressive
line.
Penalties.
No.
They're not holds or anything.
Or
masks
or unsportsman. Do something unsportsmanlike, Laremy. You're doing the most sportsmanlike thing, which is conceding 5 yards to the other team on important plays. Quite sportsmanlike.
Yeah.
But I can tell you this season, no games yet with zero penalties.
Well, and Ross brought up a good point about, and you know what, I'm glad a couple people, Luis asked me this on KHOE the other night, and I was glad I hadn't been hearing the questions properly when people ask, like, well, why is he doing this? What's wrong? And I forget sometimes that it is, like, it's as simple as, I forget to explain, the reason that offensive tackles will get those false starts is, like Ross said, they're trying to time the snap count perfectly so that they just get that extra little bit of that millisecond that helps them get their second foot in the ground quick enough to be able to respond to everything, anything. But you got to be good at doing it. And Laremy is really, really, really bad at doing it. If you think about pass rushers have that same attitude sometimes where, like, all right, I'm going to get an offsides every now and then, but the sum total of it is worth it. So you got to find that balance of, like, okay, I'm getting a good jump. Every now and then I'm going to get an offsides. So really good offensive tackles, every now and then they're going to get a false start. Laremy's just bad at it. Yeah. And he's been bad at it with multiple different centers.
Yeah.
And Laremy does it when he's worst at it is in the most critical of situations. He so often has false starts in crucial moments in the game when it ends up being a drive killer for the offense. So he's really, really bad at it. And yet he doesn't seem to care.
Yeah.
And I don't think apparently nobody on the Texans seems to hold him accountable. The other thing, too, and you brought this up during the break, Sean, I've seen multiple people say, well, this is the last holdover from the Bill O'Brien era. No, this is Nick Caserio. Caserio gave Laremy Tunsil a new contract last year.
Yeah.
I mean, this is a Nick Caserio re-up, basically.
That was the next text I was going to read, actually, was the one from, it's from Middle Screen, actually. Coach Middle Screen, loyal listener, says Tunsil and Howard, too, and he's not the, by the way, Middle Screen's not the only one pointing this out, that these are B.O.B. Titus drafted in 2019, Tunsil traded for in 2019, back when Bill O'Brien was essentially the GM of the team. Well, Brian Gain was still there for the Howard pick, but at any rate, they were Bill O'Brien guys, Middle Screen. Tunsil and Howard, two of the few holdovers from the B.O.B. era, and it shows, to Seth's point, it's no. Once you give a contract extension to somebody, you are putting your stamp of approval on those players. So these aren't Bill O'Brien guys anymore. They're on second contracts that were given out that were given out with both Nick Caserio and D'Amico Ryans in the building.
I think it's becoming evident, though, too, that if I had to guess, Blake Fisher getting drafted in the second round was not a best player available type of scenario. That was, all right, well, for one, just on the pure math side of things, we've got a couple highly paid offensive tackles. At some point, they're going to have to pay C.J. Stroud, and let's get a younger guy in here that can take some of that off. But then, two, D'Amico inherited both those guys. D'Amico inherited Titus Howard and Laremy Tunsil. And I think that I don't think either of them are really a D'Amico culture fit.
Yeah.
And, I'm more than ready. I'm more than ever right now. I'm ready to, like, all right, sink or swim, Blake Fisher. Just get in there and let's see what you can do.
At left tackle or right tackle?
Yeah.
Left tackle. Yeah.
I think Laremy's a bad influence on those dudes, man. The guy just doesn't care. I mean, it's not like there's nothing you can tell me that shows one bit that he cares about actually the team or doing things in the run game, especially the right way or setting a good example for other players. I think he just wants to be the highest paid offensive tackle in football, and he knows that being really good at pass protection is what gets that done. And even if you harm the team in the moment with all these false starts, that as long as it shows that he didn't give up any sacks,
right,
then there you go.
Right.
You know,
it's PFF
he's gonna be
grade.
The highest paid guy.
Yep, PFF grade was good. His pass pro was good. If you had to guess, if indeed it wasn't a best player available when they drafted Blake Fisher with the 57th pick in this past draft, who do you think? Do you think they had one of the two specifically in mind for Blake Fisher to step in for sooner rather than later? Or do you feel like it was maybe a hedge going, okay, we're probably not going to. I mean, for all we said about Tunsil, he's clearly been a better player than Titus Howard has. And he makes more money than Titus Howard at the same time.
I think Titus still has the potential in him to be a really good, solid right tackle in the league. And making whatever he's making, that's fine.
It's not tippy top of the market.
Yeah. I would think that, honestly, if I'm D'Amico, and this is one of the things that's still, I'm curious about all of this and how D'Amico really feels about all this, that you've got a diva left tackle that doesn't seem to care just about eliminating any of the glaring weaknesses either in his leadership or his game, that it infects younger players. Like, it's a horrible example to have as one of your highest paid guys. Think about all they gush about the other guys and how they do things the right way, how hard they practice, all those things.
Yeah.
Laramie's a guy that just hardly ever practices. And his, you know, CJ, remember in the offseason last year, CJ was doing that interview about Laramie Tunsil and how he's super vet, you know, like, yeah, doesn't do anything extra, doesn't do this, like, he's super vet. He was 29 years old, as CJ was saying that. And that's the way that Laramie Tunsil had operated when he was 28 years old, 27 years old. Like, you know, you're not super vet yet. You're still a relatively young player. And I can't imagine that that's what D'Amico wants on his football team. And right now, it's honestly, it is gumming up a lot of other things, too. And I don't care how good he is in pass protection. It's keeping you from being the type of football team that you want them to be. I've fought it forever, and I've kind of made excuses here or there, but man, him not taking any accountability for it and him acting like he's the victim in these penalties, and him again blaming a center as he's done before over these past several years, I don't understand what part of that fits in with D'Amico Ryan's culture. It's a huge gap between what they're telling the team. D'Amico can say all the things he wants about establishing culture and everything, but it's a blemish on D'Amico right now, the fact that this is one of the guys that you're paying more than anybody else and that is a captain on your team and all of those other things.
It sounds like you would start Blake Fisher at left tackle this Sunday against Jacksonville.
Yeah.
That's what I'm hearing.
Just go ahead and do it and see what happens. I don't know. If you genuinely really want to be a really good offense.
Yeah.
I mean, and then
at least send a message to the rest of the team.
If you want to be a really genuinely great team,
if
you want to capitalize on all this talent you've accumulated, then yes. If you genuinely believe your own propaganda, because it just feels like empty propaganda. It starts to feel like empty propaganda if one guy's getting a pass on everything. He keeps getting a pass, keeps getting a pass, keeps getting a pass, but we're going to hold the rest of you accountable.
God, this is where I wish we could talk to every guy that voted for Laramie to be a captain of the team and go, why did you vote for him?
That's the thing, though. That's the problem.
Yeah.
Is that, like, okay, these young guys and everybody else on the team, they feel like, that is. Okay, this is who we need to emulate.
Yeah.
This is the guy that I want to be like. I want to be like this guy that doesn't seem to actually give a damn.
Right, right. Text message, have they ripped the C off his jersey yet? No, but if you listen to the show, you know that's how Seth and I advocate the removal of stature from somebody, is to rip the letter off of their lapel.
Like you would in a war movie.
Right,
you
right.
Just go up and rip it off.
Fashion,
either that or make him wear a backwards C.
Upside down.
Yes.
Backwards, yeah.
Upside down doesn't work with a letter C, but backwards, true. Yes. Yeah, backwards,
yeah,
C.
Yeah, I meant pointing down.
Oh, pointing down. Rotate it to the right.
Looks like a tunnel. Yeah. Why do you have a tunnel on your jersey? Okay, if someone text message, if someone calls you about Tunsil, what is a fair trade price for him? That opens up Pandora's box, because I'm guessing that you take a massive cap hit if you trade Laramie Tunsil, because all that bonus money gets accelerated onto your cap this year.
Yeah, that's a tough thing. Yeah. It's a tricky one, too. But there's ways you can manipulate that and maneuver it.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
As long as it ends with Laramie Tunsil being the highest paid offensive tackle again, Laramie's going to be open to it.
Yeah.
You know, Laramie would be like, anything. Yeah, do whatever we got to do to be sure I'm the highest paid offensive tackle.
His dead cap hit is $50 million right now. Like, Laramie ain't going anywhere, man. Laramie, and let's be real. Let's be real. Laramie ain't getting benched either. You know, I know you. I respect your idea to do what you're talking about with Blake Fisher, and I completely understand where you're coming from. You and I are on the same side of this thing. But the reality is, he will be the left tackle for this team, not just on Sunday against the Jags. I don't know. Like, how many weeks of drive-killing false starts would it take for D'Amico to bench him? Not for Seth Payne to bench him. For D'Amico to bench him, do you think?
I would say this game where, again, man, it's just, it's his whole, the whole way he operates if he gets those penalties again, I mean, what do you, Sean, what do you do if he goes out, if he went out and did the same thing this week that he did last week, where he's just getting penalty after penalty in the first half? Was it four penalties in the first half?
Four.
And then yes.
One in the second
then
half.
He slowed it down and yeah. only got one in the
yeah,
second
yeah.
half.
Yeah, he improved in the second half. Yeah.
Okay, so maybe he heard the message in the second half. And
maybe. Or maybe they were losing by three scores and he stopped caring about getting off, you know, getting out quick on his pass protect, on, you know, getting that second step in the ground, like Ross Tucker said. He just,
yeah.
We're trailing by three touchdowns here. I'm good. I'm done. Yeah, I don't know. If that's a great question. If he gets four penalties within, and it was four penalties within like 20 minutes of game time. You know what I mean? Like it started midway through the first quarter, and the last one he got before the 2-minute warning of the first half. Like it was on four consecutive drives.
It was, and you know to me, Sean. You know, I've been pretty good about eating pretty clean over the past 6 months
yes.
or so. And so on game day, I let loose a little bit,
yeah.
you know? It's not a cheat day, but I have a little bit of fun. And we were sitting up there in the lounge watching the game, and our boss, Parker, had brought in some kolaches.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm like, oh, I'm going to have a couple kolaches.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
This is living. And I spit half of my second kolache out on the ground after that second false start because I was as angry as I've been in maybe 5 years
right.
in that moment. And there it goes. I lost half a kolache that day, Sean.
Yeah.
Half a kolache that I felt like I'd earned. Laramie Tunsil might as well have smacked it out of my hand.
You didn't pick it up off the ground and just throw it back in your mouth? The old Seth would have done that.
I had to pick it off of Andy, the engineer.
The engineer's head?
So, yeah, he didn't even realize I had spit kolache on him. I felt awful about it.
You were mad.
Could have been a very degrading moment, but luckily Andy didn't realize that I had spit on his back.
You were so mad. Oh my God! Let's give away these U of H tickets.
I appreciate though too that I could tell that you guys were trying hard not to laugh at me.
Yeah,
because I was so angry.
sorry. I said U of H tickets, Texans tickets. Sorry
okay.
about that. Yeah, Texans tickets. Ben's getting in my ear while I'm listening to you talk about your half-eaten, gnarled kolache. Let's give away these Texans tickets. Yeah, you want to go watch them torture the Jacksonville Jaguars this weekend? Get back on track? Well, be caller number 5 right now. If you could be at NRG Stadium sitting in the front row, think about that in your head. If I could just be there. Well, you can. Just be caller number 5 right now, and you win a pair of tickets in the bullpen. That's caller number 5, 713-572-4610. You'll have two more chances to win today. Just make sure you're listening in the noon hour and the 5 o'clock hours for your chance and your cue to call. It's a Texans Ticket Tuesday on your home of the Texans, Sports Radio 610. We're giving U of H tickets away too, right, Ben? Later in the show?
Yes.
Okay, gotcha. What time are we doing that? Do you remember?
9 hour.
9 o'clock hour. Okay, so there you go. All right, yeah, Texans Ticket Tuesday, baby. So be in that bullpen. Phones are ringing. Caller number 5 is the winner of those tickets. All right, let's do a quick check-in, if we could. There are some coaches that are on thin ice right now. So we're going to check in on our head coach death pool and see who's in line to win this thing between me and Seth. How are the four selections each of us made before the season? How are they faring right now so far this season? The head coach, and who's at the top of the odds board to get fired first? I don't know if I'm buying this one, but we'll see. We'll share that with you coming up next.
Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
Right, let's take a look. My guess is these odds for first head coach fired probably shifted last night. These are as of yesterday before Monday Night Football. Mike McCarthy's number one on the list right now. We'll go through the picks that Seth and I had before the season in a second and see how our guys are doing on here, because that's what we do on this show. We have pools about when people are going to get fired from their jobs. Somewhere they probably have a pool on radio personalities in town and when we're going to get fired. And if that's the case, then that is just karma for us. But we had a pool on which NFL head coach would be fired first. We'll get to those. We'll reset that in a second. But Mike McCarthy is a 3-1 favorite right now to be the first head coach fired. Dallas Cowboys head coach Mike McCarthy. As of yesterday, before Monday Night Football, Seth, Doug Peterson, Jacksonville, was number 2 on the odds board at 4-1. Was last night's piss-poor effort by the Jags enough to bump him ahead of Mike McCarthy on the odds to get fired first?
I think it should have been already, just because Jerry Jones is not quick to fire his head coaches.
I agree.
You know, it's going back to Like Jason Garrett was there for 10 years, and it seemed like every year, like, well, this is the year they finally pull the trigger on Jason Garrett, and he just doesn't do it. He waits and waits and waits and waits. So I think I would have already put Doug Peterson up there. Boy, the way that Trevor Lawrence played last night, that interception to DeMar Hamlin was just ugly. 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 Really nice moment for DeMar Hamlin, and just, I think, people in general. That was a heartwarming moment that DeMar Hamlin got that pick.
Yeah.
But boy, yes. Boy, did Trevor Lawrence gift it to him.
DeMar Hamlin had a much better Monday night last night than he did a year or so ago.
Was it only a year ago?
No, it was towards the end of the 2022 season. So it was about 21 months ago. Yeah.
Yeah. So that was ugly, man. And as Ross Tucker had pointed out, because Ross Tucker was there at the game, you know, calling it on the radio, and it just seemed that was a classic. Man, remember when Gary Kubiak got fired after the Jaguars game, ironically enough, when the year he got fired? There was something about the team that just looked like they didn't show up ready to play, and that at least ended up being... The Texans put up a fight in that game.
Yeah.
Bearded Schaub came in.
TJ Swearinger put up a little too much of a fight. Gary fired, probably.
The Jaguars put up zero fight in that game at any point, right from the get-go. That's the kind of performance, especially in a primetime game, that if it doesn't get the head coach fired, you could totally see the next week being the cherry on top and the rubber stamp on the decision. So I think there's a very good chance Doug Peterson, if the Texans show up and look, just put in a competent performance versus the Jaguars, they should win. And Doug Peterson might get fired on the tarmac at Hobby Airport.
He might, which would mean neither of us would win our head coach death pool. Seth and I pick four coaches before each season, with the goal being to pick the one that gets fired first. You and I have tied for third place on this list. You have Brian Daboll. I have Kevin Stefanski. I think those are two pretty solid picks right now.
Yeah.
They just went against each other this weekend up in Cleveland, mm-hmm. and Daboll won that matchup. That's still a bad, bad Giants team. And it's obviously not a great Cleveland team either.
Yeah, I don't think any fan base or owner or GM or anybody else thought, like, oh, there, now that's the Giants team that we wanted to see.
Exactly.
You know who might get Stefanski fired specifically? Follow me through on this one. Joe Brady, the new offensive coordinator for the Bills, was getting all kinds of praise on the broadcast last night, and rightfully so, because Josh Allen looks like he's reborn this year. He looks like he's a genuine, bona fide NFL quarterback, distributing the ball, doing all those things. Joe Brady took over for one Ken Dorsey last year with the Bills offensive coordinator.
Yeah, we're seeing that.
Who's the offensive coordinator for the Browns now?
Oh, boy.
Ken Dorsey.
Yeah.
If I'm the owner for the Browns, I'm looking at this and saying, why is the guy who was obviously a big part of any kind of perceived problem in Buffalo, why is he now our offensive coordinator? Help me understand this, Kevin Stefanski. Why is this the guy you wanted to bring in to help you with the offense?
Well, if I'm the owner of the Brev, I'm Jimmy Haslam. And other than his bank account, I have no other reason to want to be Jimmy Haslam. But at least in this moment, if I call Jimmy Haslam.
Jimmy Haslam doesn't do it for you?
No.
Stir the juices.
No, God, no, no. Getting it on, and then all I'm hearing about is counseling the whole time. No, mm-hmm. no. But Stefanski gets called into the owner's office and just pulls up that 5-second clip on the internet of Ken Dorsey murdering an iPad. Remember that? Like, the Buffalo didn't convert on some third down or something, and he just takes the iPad or the Surface Pad or whatever it's called and just starts slamming it, like, multiple times, like a maniac. I would just play that and go, why did we hire this guy right here?
Dude, if we did a power ranking of NFL owners, the male NFL owners, which wives would you want to be married to? I feel like Hannah's probably up in the number one right now.
Yeah, Cal would be pretty high up that list.
I don't know. It's a power ranking I don't want to do on the radio because it's just too easy to be. We would end up being a crossover hit into, this is what men are. This is what scum men are and everything. And yet, I feel like for multiple reasons, people would definitely pick Hannah compared to D. Haslam or anybody else.
I'll say this. I don't know any. I can't, like, rattle off who the wives are of all 32 NFL owners, yeah. You know, or 31. I know Green Bay is like different. I can't rattle off who the wives are, but I would blindly just take Hannah and say, okay, you get the other 30. Now keep arguing against me here. I would like, right. If it were a debate, I would take Hannah in that debate blindly against any of the other wives.
Well, and I'll say it because on multiple fronts, because if we want to just be dirtbag dudes about it or whatever, Hannah's a very attractive lady, right?
Yeah.
So there's that. She's going to be, without looking at all the other NFL owners, she's going to be very, very high in that category. But are you telling me and she's going to make you way better at your job too?
Oh, dude.
Instead of somebody who's a bane on your existence and you wonder oh my God, this is, she's actually going to make you much better at your job.
Yeah.
And I feel like I can't think of anybody else out there right now that would be higher than Hannah.
Good job, Cal and Hannah. Good job, both of you. I have Antonio Pierce in our death pool. I actually feel good. We'll hear from Antonio Pierce in the Pettycast in the next segment. Antonio Pierce of the Raiders. I have him. I have Dennis Allen. I don't feel great about him being fired first. They're 2-1. You have Nick Sirianni. The Eagles are 2-1, but it is a shaky, shaky, shaky 2-1.
Shaky 2-1. I'll tell you, I've only watched the 12-minute YouTube highlight package of that Saints-Philadelphia game, but my first impression of it was, man, those two teams came out for blood in a good way. Yeah. That looked like, just from watching the 12-minute highlight reels, it looked like those teams came ready to play.
Yeah.
And, a lot of times with a defensive battle, it's more a matter of the offenses playing poorly. The impression I got was that those two defenses came out and were playing old school football. And, so from a Nick Sirianni standpoint, obviously there's still some things that they're not doing as efficiently or as well as they were doing a couple years ago. But that looked like an Eagles team that was tough and gritty, et cetera, et cetera. And that also, my other impression of that game was, man, Saquon Barkley is definitely a good look for paying running backs right now.
Saquon was great in that game. You have Robert Saleh. I don't think he's in any danger right now if this is the version of Aaron Rodgers we get. I have Todd Bowles. They didn't look good against Denver, but I think Tampa Bay is going to be fine. You have Sean McDermott, which is basically like the equivalent of just like crumpling up your ticket at a horse racing track and throwing it on the ground.
No, Sean McDermott, I think maybe
There's a better chance he wins Coach of the Year. Now.
The way the Bills have played, as a defensive-minded head coach, one of the big tests is not just having a good defense, obviously, but how do you help develop this young quarterback? All the reasons people say you shouldn't get a defensive-minded head coach. He had Brian Daboll originally, who was really good for Josh Allen. And then without Brian Daboll, it looked almost like Josh Allen was still very good, but had kind of gotten stuck at a certain level. Now he's got an offensive coordinator again that seems to be taking him to a new level.
Yeah, Joe Brady.
And they're doing it without Stephon Diggs on the roster.
Yeah, that's right. And the Texans still can't really get out of second gear with Stephon Diggs on their roster right now.
Yeah.
You know, there's that. And it's not Diggs' fault. It's just, it is what it is. Pettycast. We do it every Tuesday at 8 o'clock. We get super petty about things going negatively for people around the league. Deshaun Watson, Will Levis, Bill Belichick, Antonio Pierce, Micah Parsons. We'll hear from them coming up in the Pettycast, coming up next.